So we're in the sixth week of this series, Alive, where we're telling the stories of resurrection in the Bible. And by the way, just a side note, the last couple of weeks we've had our little egg incubator here. That's up on the table. You notice it's not here today. That's because they're hatching. They're hatching. Tablelifechurch.org/peepwatch. Don't let me catch you watching that during the service because they are poking through. But anyway, and you can watch them for the next couple days. We have our little resurrection experience here. You'll have chicks to hold, hopefully for Easter and take pictures. But anyway, we are in our sixth week in these stories of resurrection. And we kind of started off by talking about how like eggs, right, look dead on the outside, but there's life on the inside. And that's kind of like what God is pointing us to in this Lenten season as we prepare moving from death into life. And each week we've been looking at a different story in the Bible because there are quite a few of them, of people and experiences of coming from death to life. And today's Palm Sunday, as we've stated over and over already, but it marks the start of what's the holiest week in the Christian calendar, and it is Holy Week. The story of Jesus entering in Jerusalem and eventually going to the cross, being crucified, dying, being buried, and then resurrection 3 days later that we celebrate on Easter. But I want to pause at the beginning of that, because did you know what sparked the whole thing? What sparked and what ended Jesus's ministry and was the event that actually led to Jesus's arrest and to his death on the cross? The event that started all of that was actually a resurrection. It was actually a resurrection. And it's the story of Jesus and the resurrection of Lazarus. And the church over the last centuries has actually told this story traditionally on Palm Sunday because of that. Isn't that crazy? You think about like, but why though? That doesn't seem to make sense. Well, the truth is not everybody wants a resurrection. Think about that. Not everybody wants a resurrection. Not everybody wanted a resurrection, and in, I'd say, our lives, not everybody wants to be raised to new life. Sometimes living in our darkness and our fear and the places is not something, even though it seems attractive to get out of, is not something that we really, really want. And we're going to talk about that today, because fear itself makes people do very dangerous things. And the story of Lazarus takes place in the town of Bethany, which is about 2 miles or so from Jerusalem, not very far. It's on the eastern slope of the Mount of Olives. And the name Bethany, by the way, it actually means house of the poor, house of the poor. And Bethany was known as a place for the poor, where the poor could go and their needs could be met. And Jesus, imagine that, spent a lot of time with them in Bethany, in this place. And so John chapter 11, that we're going to look at where the story takes place, begins with news. Jesus' friend Lazarus is very sick. His friend, one of his closest friends, Lazarus, and sisters Mary and Martha. And we're told that Jesus chooses to delay seeing Lazarus. And he tells his disciples that we're not going to go right away. And he still, though, he wants to travel back to this place in Judea, this region called Judea. But the disciples are kind of confused. They're like, well, you don't want to go see Lazarus, but you want to go to this very, very dangerous place. And they warn him that, Jesus, the last time that you were there, you almost got stoned. You almost got stoned. And we're like, this stone, not like this stone. This stone, okay? Get that out of your mind. Jesus, you almost got stoned there. Like, we're not going back. Some of you just got that. So this stone, think throwing stones. Anyway, so they tell them, don't go back. We don't go back. We shouldn't go back. And Jesus is like, we're going back. So what do? They start headed that direction. And eventually, they're headed to Bethany. Eventually. But it's been days after the news of Lazarus being sick, and by the time they get to Bethany, Lazarus has passed away. Lazarus has died. Lazarus is dead. And he's been dead, not just a little dead, he's a big dead. Like, for 4 whole days he's been dead. And that's significant, by the way, because in ancient times in Israel, people believed that there was kind of a superstition that the soul could kind of hang out nearby for 3 days. But then after that, it was like, I guess it's over, right? And then I'm going to go. But basically, they thought that maybe after 3 days, there could be life coming back. But we see in the scripture, It's been 4 days. It's been 4 days. On a side note, did you know that today in modern times there's actually something called a Lazarus syndrome? It's a medical diagnosis, and there's been 38 cases since the year 1982. A West Virginia lady holds the record where she actually had died and then was put on life support, and her family decided to take her off life support, and for 10 whole minutes, she was dead. 10 whole minutes, she was dead, but guess what? She actually opened her eyes and came back, and to this day, or in that time, she actually woke up and recovered to a full recovery, and they called it a Lazarus syndrome, somebody that had experienced death or their body had died but then comes back. But we see that for Lazarus, that's definitely not the case. That people can look dead and not be dead, but Jesus came at the time where Lazarus is clearly dead. Like I said, he's dead. He is gone. And so when they get there, when they get to Bethany, you imagine people are not very happy with Jesus. They called him. They said, Jesus, come. Lazarus, your friend is sick. Like, hint, hint. Come and see him. Come and be with him. Do something. But people are upset, especially Martha and Mary, the sisters of Lazarus, close friends of Jesus. And Mary, Martha goes to him to talk to Jesus, and she's a little bit ticked off. She's very, very sad and grieving at the same time. Mary is just about done with him. She just like stays in the house. She don't even want to come out and see Jesus at first. But then Jesus tries to tell them what he is going to do. And what does he do? He asks to go to the tomb. He asks to go to the tomb. And not only is he talking to Mary and Martha here, by the way, there is a huge crowd around him. There is all these people that are gathered around Jesus as he's asking Mary and Martha to go to the tomb. And we're told this, that Jesus wept, which is the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept, and he did so in front of everybody. And some people saw, oh my gosh, what he must have really loved Lazarus. He saw what love that he had for him. But others, when they saw his tears, they wondered why he didn't save his friend. Wonder why he didn't intervene sooner, why he didn't come sooner. If he really, really loved him, he would have done that, right? And then we see this. It's Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time, there's a bad odor, for he's been in there 4 days. This is in the Bible. I didn't write this. He's been in there 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So rewind time a little bit to our last stories of resurrection. If you've been with us, if you didn't hear those stories, you can catch them online. But when Jesus raised Jairus' daughter, what did he do? He ordered everyone out of the room. It was just him and her. He told them after she was resurrected not to tell anyone. But here is a different picture. Jesus stands in front of a large crowd. He prays aloud, and then he calls out to Lazarus and says, come out of this tomb. And this man starts walking out of the tomb, except he's all wrapped up in grave clothes at this point, not walking well. Like, it's just a crazy scene, very different than the previous resurrections that Jesus had performed. But you know who almost objected to this whole thing happening? Who almost prevented it from taking place? Martha, right? Martha was worried about the stink. Martha was worried about the smell. Her objection to Jesus opening the grave, and in the King James Version, it said, he stinketh. It's going to stinketh, Jesus. She's concerned. And her objection there, think about that, is to tell Jesus, no, don't go in. But why? She's afraid. She's afraid. Like I said, fear can make us do crazy things. And the first crazy thing it can make us do is that fear keeps us from rolling stones away. Fear keeps us from rolling stones away. Martha was afraid what will be found inside. She didn't want Jesus to see this decaying, yucky, stinky body of her brother. She didn't want to do that. It was easier to hide it. Keep it behind the stone, Jesus. He's dead. Just move on. Go on, Jesus. It's easier to hide it than to not only face reality, but to risk the healing and the resurrection. See, Jesus, though, he does the contrary. He wants the contrary. Jesus wants to enter the deep, dark spaces of our tombs in our lives. He wants to enter those places. Jesus is not afraid of the smell. He's not afraid of what he might find. He isn't afraid, even if we are. And that's why, for many of us, we will enter a stage of faith. Once we've placed our faith in Jesus, that we've received that gift of salvation, we've trusted Jesus, if we continue to journey with him and grow with him, we will face a stage where Jesus wants to access those deep, dark tombs inside of us. The ones that we're like Martha saying, no, 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 Jesus, don't go in there. It's too stinky. I can't let you in there. That's not off limits. This is not. Jesus will do those things and open up places that you didn't even know were there. But fear is going to be the thing that keeps us from rolling those stones away. See, most of us never get there. We never allow those stones to be rolled away because we're comfortable with keeping Jesus at an arm's length. We don't know what Jesus is going to do when he enters into the tomb. We're afraid. And friends, that's the power of fear. Fear can keep us from rolling those stones away, can prevent us from experiencing the resurrection because we're afraid of what Jesus might do, what he might change, what he might bring to light. And usually when we read this story, we usually stop preaching there when Jesus tells the people, go take his grave clothes off, right? He's not dead anymore. Take his grave clothes off. Give him new clothes to wear. We usually stop preaching after Lazarus comes out of the tomb. But friends, what happens next is key. Because not all is well. Not everybody's having a party after Lazarus comes out of the tomb. Because we see this in verse 45. Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin, which is a holy council. So the scene shifts, right? It's a party. It's, oh my gosh, Lazarus is back. What are we going to do? Like tears and then what? You know, just like all this is going on. People are cheering. The scene shifts. The music changes. The soundtrack goes dun, 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 dun. Because not everybody is happy about a resurrection. Not everybody is happy about a resurrection. And I dare to say the same thing for our lives too. Have you experienced that? That not everyone will be celebrating when you're sober for a month. Not everyone's going to celebrate when you say, I want to start going to church. Not everyone's going to celebrate when you start over after the abusive relationship you've been in. Not everyone's going to celebrate when you start the new job. Not everyone's going to celebrate when you risk something to help someone in need, that you humble yourself to serve another. Not everyone is going to celebrate a resurrection. Then we see this. What happens in that little meeting behind closed doors is this. What are we accomplishing? They ask, this is the Sanhedrin. Here is this man performing many signs. That's Jesus, right? If we let him go like this, everyone will believe in him, and then the Romans will come and take away both our temple and our nation. And then one of them named Caiaphas. Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up. You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it's better for you, get this, that one man die for the people than that the whole nation perish. He didn't say this on his own, but as the high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation, and not only for that nation, but also for the scattered children of God, to bring them together and to make them one. So, what's the outcome of this meeting? Well, from that day on, they plotted to take his life. Therefore, Jesus no longer moved about publicly among the people of Judea. Instead, he withdrew to a region near the wilderness, to a village called Ephraim, where he stayed with his disciples. Fear makes us do some crazy and dangerous things. Second thing that it does is that it blinds us from seeing God's hand. Fear blinds us. Blinds us from seeing God's hand. In this scripture, by the way, this is the only time the word Romans is mentioned in all four of the Gospels. The only time. And the Romans, In the context of this time period, the Romans were a source of much of the anxiety in Jesus' day for both ordinary Jews and for their leaders. And basically, the Romans had taken over the entire Middle East. They had armies who were stationed to the north in Syria, armies that could be called in at a moment's notice to squash any rebellion, to kill everybody at hand. And in truth, thousands of young Jewish rebels had been crucified when the Roman army marched into the nation. Thousands of people had been put up on crosses and as an example to say, don't even try. And so, though many of the Jewish leaders longed for Roman rule to end, they actually preferred the kind of semi-freedom that Rome gave them. Rome gave them over instead of experience devastation that would follow a major revolution. I mean, you think about it. These guys who worked in the temple, they still had their jobs. They still had control of the temple, and they had control of the people who were following the Jewish faith. They had their power. And the thing is, healings on the Sabbath, as far as Jesus is concerned, healing on the Sabbath was one thing, but raising the dead in public was just too much. It was appropriate, too, they reasoned, that at this time of year, it was almost the festival of the Passover, when the Jewish people would be celebrating and bringing in lambs to be sacrificed and killed as a reminder of God's promise of freedom in the story of the Exodus. This was a perfect time, they reasoned. If Jesus was going to start a revolution and overthrow everything, this was the time he would do it. They were afraid. They were afraid that he was gathering support for a march on Jerusalem. They were afraid that troops could be called in from Syria at any time to kill everyone, because that would be the end of any hope that they had for their nation, and perhaps the end of them as a nation. See, they clearly feared that if Jesus went any further, they would lose everything that they had. And Caiaphas was the high priest. He was the leader of the temple. And isn't it interesting that out of his mouth comes the words, well, it's better if one man die than we lose everything. It's better that this one man, Jesus, hint, be put to death than us lose all that we have. Think about that. He was referring to that the nation would be spared by the Romans. And he did get it right in that sense, but Jesus would indeed die, but not just for the Jewish people, not just for any nation. There is no favorite nation of God anyway. But for all God's people, for all the children of God on earth, from every race and every tongue and every background and every nationality. But their fear, think about this, blinded them from seeing Jesus right in front of them. The Jesus that they had been anticipating for centuries, by the way, as a coming Messiah. They had missed the Messiah coming to them. One who was not mounting a political revolution at all. This was no Les Mis. Not only was there no singing, but there was no revolution coming with swords and battle. This was a shepherd who was speaking of giving his life for his sheep. He was not calling anyone to take up arms for battle. The victory that Jesus intended to win will be won out of self-giving, sacrificial love. The one they had been waiting for. But they were too afraid to see it. They only saw what they could lose. Isn't that true? Isn't fear a powerful thing? It makes us only focus on the things that we can lose. And psychology actually supports that. That it supports the fact that the fear of loss can be blinding. It can cause us to have tunnel vision. There's a thing called loss aversion. There's a story that goes back to August 5th, 1949. In the mountains in Montana, there were 15 smoke jumpers who were deployed to put out a wildfire under their leader named Wag Dodge. This is a true story, by the way. They were deployed into the fire and to do their jobs of putting out the fire before it would spread. But then something called a blow-up, if you're a firefighter, you know what that is, but it's called a blow-up happened, that the winds rose, and pretty soon there was a fire that was spreading at a speed that no one could contain. And so the leader, Wag Dodge, he called to the men, to the other smoke jumpers, and told them, drop your gear and follow me. Drop your gear and follow me. He yelled at them over and over and over again. But 13 of them could not see the logic in dropping their equipment. And 13 of them perished in the fire. Crazy, huh? Wag Dodge actually survived. He actually had burnt a little circle on the ground around him and had laid in there covering himself, leaving his equipment far behind. Several other men, they had actually run far enough and hid behind a rock in order to save themselves. But these men could have been saved had they just dropped what they were carrying. But they couldn't see it. They couldn't see it. They could only see what they could lose, because that was what they were doing as firemen. They were carrying the very things that you put out fires with, and dropping that in the face of a fire just didn't seem to make sense. Fear of letting go is what ultimately blinded them, and they lost their lives because of it. And I think that goes to the Pharisees too, right? They couldn't see Jesus. They were so afraid of what they could lose that they missed Jesus in front of them. But I think it also relates to us too, right? Are you afraid of loss? Are you so afraid of losing that you're afraid of doing anything? Are you afraid of dropping your equipment to enter into new life? You know, maybe a better question for you, like, I'm not really afraid of loss or anything, you know, maybe death a little bit, I don't know, something like that. But maybe a better question for you is, are you afraid of change? Because guess what? Change is loss. And when we're afraid of change, we're actually grieving. We're actually grieving, and most of us are to some extent. Most churches are afraid of change and loss. And we're so afraid of loss, though, that we can fail to see Jesus up ahead. And in my ministry, some of the churches that I've worked with, both on our district, we're part of the Church of the Nazarene, as well as around the country, it's very interesting to see the churches that fear change the most hold on the most, refuse to let go, and eventually close their doors. The ones that say, hey, we got nothing to lose, we'll try, we'll reach out, we're following the call of Jesus, we're going to take a risk, are the ones that wind up being the ones that God uses, and they begin to see Jesus embodied in new people and embodied in a mission in new ways. We can be so afraid of loss that we fail to see Jesus ahead. That what we see as disturbing interruptions are often God's divine invitations. Fear can make people do some crazy things, can blind us from seeing God's hand, can choose death over life because we're so afraid to let go of what we've been holding on to. But at this point, we see that there is no point of return for Jesus. Jesus finishes his signs, his miracles, and he goes into hiding. He has a dinner at Bethany with his friends. There's a story in that that we're not going to unpack today, but you can read the rest of the end of John chapter 11 into 12. But we see after that dinner, we see that the crowd, though, has not gone away. And John tells us that meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there. Like, he can't get away, right? He found out that Jesus was there and came not only because of him, but also to see who? Lazarus. Whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well. What? Kill Lazarus? For on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing in him. Third thing that fear can make us do. Fear can make destruction seem reasonable. Fear can make destruction seem reasonable. Poor Lazarus, right? He didn't do anything except come back to life. The Pharisees, they plot to kill the source of the crowd, which includes Lazarus. He was totally, like, innocent. He didn't do anything. But fear can do lots of things. It can convince us that killing is a good thing. It can convince us that destruction is a good thing. Fear can destroy so many things. You've seen this. I've seen this. It can cause us to want to destroy someone's reputation because we're afraid. It can cause us to fear so much of being found out that we tell lies, that we kill relationships, that we kill one another's dreams. We protect ourselves by making the other the enemy. The fear can make destruction seem reasonable. And backing up, it doesn't seem to make sense. But when you're in the midst of it, it does. And that's what the chief priests planned because they were afraid. But then we see this happen. The next day, the great crowd that had come for the festival heard that Jesus was on his way to where? Jerusalem. They took palm branches. Didn't you just do that, right? Took palm branches, went out to meet him, shouting, "Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel." What's happening here? This is Palm Sunday. Well, let me just unpack that just for a minute. That we have symbols, right, that are tied to certain holidays. You know, if you see presents and stockings, what holiday is probably coming up? Christmas, right? If you see chocolate and peanut butter eggs, what do you tend to think is probably coming up? Easter, right? If you see flags put around and you see picnics going to happen, what holiday is probably coming up? 4th of July, right? Or maybe more, I don't know. But what if you saw all those things together? Like if you saw the stocking and you saw the Easter egg and then you saw the flag, like what's going on? Is that confusing or is it making a point? Well, that's what happened when Jesus entered Jerusalem. That it's Passover time, it's the great spring festival of remembering that Moses brought his people out of Egypt. It's a reminder of God seeing that his people were free from Egypt. There's the mark of the Lamb's blood, but it's also that Jesus' entry in Jerusalem, the symbols don't only go with the Passover, they go with Hanukkah too. Because Judas Maccabeus in the year 164 BC, he defeated the pagan invaders into Jerusalem. He cleansed the temple and his followers entered the city in the year 164 waving, guess what? Palm branches. And the next day, Judas Maccabeus was brought on, him and his family, as kings of Israel. See, this was all together in what Jesus was doing. He was symbolizing the last sign of Jesus' ministry, communicated who he was and what he had come to do. But then there's the crowd, right? Now, the crowd that was with them when he called Lazarus from the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to spread the word. Many people, because that they had heard he had performed this sign, went out to meet him. But the Pharisees aren't done, right? The Pharisees said to one another, "See, this is getting us nowhere. Look how the whole world has gone after him." The resurrection of Lazarus was the spark that fanned the cascading flame of destruction, leading to an unlawful arrest of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane in the dark of night, a kangaroo court in the middle of the night, and then the crucifixion of Jesus. And you know why it happened? Because of fear. Because of fear. Fear can lead us to do crazy and dangerous things if we let it. While it's easy to judge Caiaphas and the religious leaders, we too need to be careful that we can have the capacity to kill people and reputations, to hide things for the sake of trying to put those things back into the tomb. You know, maybe you've had an experience of making up stories and lies to cover up something. Maybe you have missed the hand of God because you've been following your own way. That we might be blind to the Jesus, the Messiah, right in front of us, keeping us from rolling away stones. We may be afraid of resurrection because, friends, resurrection requires death. Resurrection, death is required by resurrection because death to what we thought or expected, death to things that we hold on to, death to behaviors and thoughts and ways of life that we've been clinging to. Resurrection is a scary thing because that's what it requires. It requires letting go. But the crazy thing, the good news, though, is that God, while he let fear and evil have its way with Jesus, putting him on nails on the cross, while God allowed those things to happen, the cross shows that he even used death for his purposes of new and eternal life. And he wants to do the same for us. So what are you afraid of? What fear is preventing you from opening the tomb? Blinding you from seeing Jesus or motivating you to do things you thought you never would? What fear today on this Palm Sunday do you need to turn over to God before it causes you to do a crazy and dangerous thing? See, Jesus shows that God can use even our greatest fears for redemption, for new life, and for new purposes. we dare to turn them over to him. Let's pray.